Welcome to the Washington AI Network podcast. I'm Tammy Haddad, the founder of the Washington AI Network, where we bring together official Washington policymakers, DC insiders, and AI experts who are challenging, debating, and just trying to figure out the rules of the road for artificial intelligence. Welcome to the Washington AI Network. We are back at the House of 1229 for a conversation that's at the very heart of national security. And as regular listeners know, we have been honored to host Trump administration officials who are working so hard in the fields that we cover. Of course, Howard Lutnick joined us for the AI honors. We've had most recently Scott Cooper, TechForce, Patrick Witt. I think you guys know Patrick Witt. And tonight we have a very special guest. Please join me in welcoming Sean Cairncross. He is President Trump's National Cyber Director. He's a longtime Washington important man, and there's no more important issue, Sean. Although I don't know, you need to learn how to duck this job, I gotta say. Welcome, Sean Cairncross, please.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I also want to invite you to help me welcome Sanjay Poonen, who is the CEO and president of Cohesity. Thank you for being here. That's the Sean Cairncross Show. Okay, Sean, you released your cyber strategy. Okay, now I want to read, if you don't mind, your pillars, if I may, just so everyone can write it down. Shape adversary behavior, promote common sense regulation, modernize and secure federal government networks, secure critical infrastructure, sustain superiority in critical and emerging technologies, build talent and capacity. Sean, that's a heavy lift. Oh my goodness. So please take us through, not all of them, but how are you going to get this started?
Sure. happy to do that. First, thank you, Tammy, for having me. I appreciate being here. And thank you, everyone, for taking the time to listen. And Sanjay, great to see you.
Good to see you again. We've seen each other quite a bit the last few weeks.
We've seen each other quite a bit. I'm looking forward to this conversation. So the first thing I would say is we did put a lot of work into the strategy, but it is President Trump's cyber strategy. It's not mine. It's the administration's and the president's. And I think I make that point because I think it's an important one. What we're really trying to do here and what the president is signaling for the first time is from the top of the chain, a strategic direction for cyber as its own strategic domain. And for so long, this is an area that has developed with different authorities and different agencies operating on a tactical level in this area. But the USG haven't really pulled back to say, what are we trying to achieve in this domain holistically? How can we lever every component of the USG to get done what we're trying to do in cyber? And how can we use cyber to help on a strategic level with what we're trying to get done fundamentally elsewhere? So that's what this effort is all about.
Okay, so adversarial behavior. How do you shape adversarial behavior?
Yeah, the first thing I'd say is right now, the incentive scheme here is way out of whack. So we have seen this for decades now develop and scale and become more sophisticated, both on industry, on government networks and capabilities, whether it's espionage, nation state related criminal organizations, scam centers, ransomware actors, or the like. And it's asymmetrical. It's a huge payoff for very little cost. And there are so many points of defense. Defense just doesn't get the job done alone. And so if you're on the adversary side of this, why would you slow down? Why would you stop? And as AI, you know, artificial intelligence tools are infused into this mix, the pace picks up, the speed picks up, and it becomes even more rewarding. So I think it's incumbent on the policymaking set to say the government has a role to play in defending U.S. interests, U.S. citizens, and industry. And I should say, I know we've got international allies in the room here. I see the British are here, the Irish are here, I'm sure there are others. And we work in close partnership because we're facing the same threat actors, and this threat doesn't know borders. So what we're trying to do is impose costs on those who engage in this behavior, figure out a way to do that using the whole of government, some of it's cyber on cyber, but not all of it, to send the message that this behavior carries risk and that calculus to engage in it maybe should be revisited.
And Sanjeev, what's the role of private industries?
Well, I've been in the security industry 15 years. And when I first met Director Cancross, it was at a conference last year. He came out to visit Kevin Mandy and myself. I hadn't met him before, but I'd heard a lot of good about him. He has a legal background, but he was very common sense. And he was asking our perspective as industry leaders. We had another meeting that he initiated this time. Kevin, myself, Nikesh Arora, CEO of Palo Alto, was there. It was, again, a really good dialogue between his office and the private sector and how we could help in partnership. And, you know, if you think about us, we can play cyber defense really well, but we have ideas on cyber offense. You don't want all of us going on offense against a country. Like, what can we do to go on offense if we know it's a nation state actor in particular? We need the government to play cyber offense. And on his first point, what I was really delighted about was the point in the paper that talked about the government now playing a lot more on cyber offense. We're also very excited to play our small role in helping him write the Trump administration paper. But one of the other points that I articulated, you read out, was modernizing the government with appropriate secure infrastructure. That's where we play at Cohesity. Securing critical infrastructure. There were a couple of those six pillars that really resonated with us. He mentioned the fact that every NATO-friendly country and every democracy is going to see the same attacks that the U.S. is facing. We're the biggest GDP. We're one of the biggest democracies. And typically, the bad guys attack us first. But what we saw in the UK with the retailers last year, what we saw in Japan with the breweries, were mirror attacks of what we saw in the United States. So we'd love to, first off, keep America safe, but then use that to help the world stay safe.
Yeah, and just two follow-ups on that. So specifically, it was no accident that the president signed the cybercrime EO at the same time as he signed the strategy. That signaling is we're now treating these organizations as transnational criminal organizations. So that opens up the ability for us to say, how can we proactively get after this problem in a way that's not always reactive? So we're not waiting to do, you know, the remedial side of it and fix things, but say, how can we deny them the benefits of what they're doing, make their life hard, and deny them safe haven where they go hide out? So that's the first thing. And the second thing is, to your point, what the president has directed, I think, the administration to do is to be forward-leaning with industry, to make sure that we're viewed as partners with our terrific innovators and the private sector that we have, which is responsible and handles the critical infrastructure, defense, and operations for this country, largely. First time I met this guy, I said, look, this is what we're thinking about. This is the direction I think and others want to go. I kept looking for someone to say, no, you guys are nuts. Don't do this. And their universal response was, starting with Sanjeev, was, yeah, what are we waiting for? This needs to happen. It's been waiting for from the top direction, and we're excited to have it.
Well, it sounds like both of you are saying you're going on offense instead of waiting for something to happen. Is that a fair way to say it?
This is a proactive administration, and we believe in not letting problems fester and find their way to us.
Mm-hmm. But also even the engagement of the private industry, because, you know, while watching our friend Phil Mattingly on CNN, something happens and then we hear that government steps in and industry, it's almost like this TikTok after. But it sounds like you're coordinating in advance to maybe stop some of these cyber attacks, or not attacks, but just put this policy in place that would answer some of these questions in advance. Is that fair?
I think that is fair. I think there are two parts to that. There's the front end part of that, which, like I say, what can we do strategically to get after these actors? And that involves the private sector allows us to really scale in doing that. And there's so much work that you all do. They have great insight into this battlefield where half the time they're taking down networks
right,
as part of their standard operations. And so it's aligning those priorities and figuring out how we can allocate resources to best get at this. The second part of your point is the remediation side, sort of once something happens, what do we do about that? There, I think we've got great interagency colleagues now, FBI, DOJ, CISA, the NSA, who are terrific at helping identify and remediate those things once they happen. Now what we're doing is saying, great, once that happens, what can we do in response? How can we better prevent this from happening again?
Sanjeev?
If you look at the security industry, there's like 5,000 companies. But for the prominent ones, we're the leader in data security. Nikesh's company, Palo Alto, is the leader in network security. George Kurtz's company, endpoint security. We all get along and we like each other. And even if there's overlap, we talk a lot together. And we all have a common interest, which is keeping the country safe. Many of us also have operations in other parts of the world. For example, Israel is a good example of a country which has got really good security technology. We often have played with companies there, acquired them. We work with the UK MOD. So I think when we look across the entire world's substrate and landscape, we want to make sure that we're sharing best practices among ourselves. And when the government's willing to work with us, we are in an active dialogue with them, because this requires a collaboration on both sides. And typically, all of us who are prominently involved have major companies in every industry. So we study the attack, whether it was Cannoli Pipeline or what happened to United Healthcare Group or what happened to the Las Vegas hotels or most recently at Stryker. And we have a very good view of what's happening there that we could then feed the intelligence agencies. And we need help then from the government to say, okay, now here are the facts, what we're seeing. I think it may be time to go on offense, as an example.
It has to work together. People may sleep on how important the private sector, particularly companies like Sanjay's and Cohesity, are in protecting daily life in America. And so if we're not sharing information in a way that's at relevant speed, at the right tempo, and it's actionable, then I think it's a disservice to everyone.
Okay, so Sanjay, I want to turn to agentic AI, because the strategy also makes a bold commitment that AI can actually detect, divert, and deceive threat actors in real time. Cohesity already uses AI to protect customers and the data. How do you see agentic playing into all of this?
Well, I think it's a little bit like the age-old debate about any technology could be used for good or bad, or even going back thousands of years ago to fire. Is fire good or bad? It keeps a house warm, but it could burn down a house. The printing press. Good books have been written, bad books have been written. The internet. I think when you think about AI and agents, there's a lot of productivity. Entire aspects of publications now are being transformed through the ability to take an entire Leo Tolstoy and summarize it in a half page. But when we think about agents in the future, just the same way that we're battling these jihad drones that are coming at us that only cost $10,000, the ability to create a new ransomware attack or a new agentic attack gets cheaper with agents. And that's an example of agents being used for bad. And as we've always talked about in the security industry, we've got to be right all the time. They've got to be right only once. So if the ability to attack us, the cost goes down because they're agentic and so on. We have to build a resilience framework for agents. So these are agents that could be potentially maliciously deleting data or unintentionally deleting data. And we have an entire framework of how we think about that. I think this now requires our research in the security industry to cover not just data and applications and identity, but also agents.
Okay, you often talk about the data iceberg, the idea that while we focus on the 25% of live data we see on the surface, there's a massive 80% submerged underwater in backups and archives that is often ignored. How can government, do you think, leverage its massive data archives?
There's a long kind of thing. I won't go through all the details here, but the point that Tammy's making is if you think about where data is stored, typically you divide data into two forms. Structured data is databases. If you're a technical person, it might be an Oracle or a Databricks. Unstructured data is files. And you probably have a lot more files than you have databases. And that's why 70% of the world's data is unstructured. And as this data ages, typically the government or any bank keeps a copy of it. It's called a backup or a vault of it. And that just accumulates. And the longer you have regulatory requirements to retain that data just becomes the bottom of that iceberg. The bad guys discovered, let's not go off to the top of the iceberg. Let's go off to the bottom of the iceberg, because that's just a historical copy of everything you have. And if I can get all your history, you're likely going to pay me the ransom. So the way in which you protected that secondary data had to change. And that's how our company was born. And I think if you take any department of the government, and the same thing applies to JP Morgan, any other bank, wherever you have more data and you have especially unstructured data, you got to make sure you have a policy to secure that. And one simple thing we recommend to everybody, there's many sort of steps. We have five steps, but one that I'd point out, everybody should keep at least three copies of their data, with the third copy being in what's called an air gap cyber vault. An air gap means that this is my network and Sean's outside my network. I separate you from my network and I keep my third copy with him. So if my entire network goes down, the third copy is in a safe place. That's what it means, an air gap and a cyber vault. In our world, we call that cyber vault Fort Knox, and we want to make sure that every company has that notion of a third copy cyber vault.
Okay, so Sean, we've read the reports about Salk Typhoon, Vol Typhoon last year when China used our own AI against us by directing Anthropic's Claude Code tool to autonomously orchestrate a cyber attack against the government.
Yeah.
How do we harness the full potential of AI to secure American AI tech stack and promote American innovation?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. The first is, Tammy, the president is very forward-leaning on the innovation and deployment side of this. And we are working closely with our colleagues in the White House to build security into that framework so that it is not seen as a friction point for that innovation and deployment. And when you start to think through, people say artificial intelligence security, there are many layers to that. So you have the AI companies themselves and their cybersecurity posture. The AI infrastructure piece of it is the supply chain, the hardware, is that secure? Then you have the AI models and data poisoning concerns, et cetera. Is that secure? Then you have the AI runtime and steering issues and prompts and that sort of thing. And then you have the broader sort of societal offense and defense and the use of agentic AI. What's the role of that going to be? So it's a very broad topic that's covered, and we've got to go piece by piece on the policy piece to figure that out, and we're working on it.
Okay. Also, not to bring up everything that's happened, sorry, but Iran's cyber attack against the U.S. company Stryker. This new strategy that you have launched, would that help with attacks like that?
It helps in the sense that we're trying to get in front of this. Right now, obviously, there's an ongoing kinetic conflict in Iran, and those who wish to do us harm in cyberspace have their hands full at the minute, but they certainly are trying to engage. And there's an incredible amount of defense that's played, like I say, through the private sector, also U.S. law enforcement and the intelligence community are helpful in that. But with respect to imposing costs, yes, it's fair to say that we are engaged in imposing costs in real time on those that are trying to conduct these sorts of operations.
Okay. Sanjay, there's a major pivot in this document toward common sense regulation. The administration is talking about stripping back burdensome compliance checklists so companies can move faster. From your perspective, how will this approach change the way you work with government to protect data?
One of the things we've liked about working with Sean, the current administration, has been a focus on less regulation. Now, regulation has to have some place in AI where you're not completely allowing this to walk across privacy considerations and so on. But we want a country where innovation is thriving. That's the beauty of the United States. The tech economy here is the best in the world. We have some of the best entrepreneurs that have created great companies. And if you look at the biggest tech companies, whether it's NVIDIA or Amazon or Google or Microsoft or even new ones like OpenAI and others, this is the hotbed of innovation. And the more you shackle that innovation, the less you're going to get people moving at the pace. Silicon Valley is full of venture-funded companies that thrive that.
They're not, by the way, and just in Silicon Valley. They're all around here now,
and
too.
And Washington, too.
See, everyone wants to be with us. Right?
So there has to be a reasonable and common sense view as to how you have guardrails, but you don't overdo it. Mm-hmm. And that's the wonderful thing we've liked about working with Sean and the current administration is there's a sensible view on AI. There's a proactive view of how you adopt this. In some senses, we also follow a couple of other big companies. NVIDIA is an example of a company that's really found the right way to deal with the policies on AI. We've liked the fact the current administration is proactive about AI. Jensen and NVIDIA are an investor in our company. So on AI, we're following a little bit of how these companies that are bigger than us are shaping that. And in cyber, there's a connection, as Sean mentioned earlier, between AI and cyber, because many of the security algorithms we apply are AI-based algorithms.
Okay, Sean, I want to ask you about Pillar 6, and that's the cyber workforce pipeline.
Yeah.
There's so much conversation about government and private industry, both in skilling and reskilling. What's your plan?
There's a huge hole in and need for cyber jobs to be filled in the workforce. That's true in the private sector. It's true in the federal government, both on the civilian side and the defense side. We're always looking for talented people. So what we want to do is we want to align incentives to build a patriotic cyber force who is also taught skills and given the ability to take those innovative ideas to the marketplace and earn a living. So we intend to launch a cyber academy, which is not a brick and mortar building, but is a nonprofit that is stitching together the existing disparate federal programs and training programs in this space. If you need upskilling, you can come into the program. If you are new to the workforce, come in and be trained. Let's get people with the right skill set in the right jobs. It dovetails with the president's emphasis on let's put people to work. You don't need a four-year degree necessarily. Get trained, get a certificate, get moving. Pair that with a foundry and an accelerator, which will seed private capital and venture capital to get new concepts to development,
wow,
use federal authorities and testing capability to test those products, help bring them to market and deploy them. We're very excited about this. We're working through the process now, but we will, as we have in the past, be in full conversation with partners in industry and the private sector as we move it forward. But we're thrilled about it.
Are you ready to sign people up for the Cyber Academy? Because we might have some people here. Oh, we have a volunteer in the front row.
We would welcome you as student one. No, we will be hopefully very soon.
Okay, I look forward to that.
Yeah.
So Sanjay, where do you see the biggest opportunities protect Americans today? You know, what's not happening now? What would you like to see? It's your dream. Sean's here. We've got all these folks in the audience, people listening.
So there's two ways. There's a protect, but there's also something I'm very optimistic about in AI. Typically, the biggest agencies in the government and the biggest banks have a lot of money they spend on cyber. So you may see an attack on a JP Morgan, one of the biggest banks, but they've got so much spending, the likelihood is low. Same with perhaps the Department of War. But the unified school districts are getting hit pretty bad. You heard the LA Unified School District from several years ago. Hospitals. They don't spend as much. And these are important parts of our community. These are school districts with students. We got to protect those students. What do you gain out of publishing the grades of all students in a cyber attack and ransomwareing the school? They don't have a lot of money anyway.
Why do they do it? Just chaos?
It's just to create chaos. And hospitals have responsibility for critical emergency equipment in the intensive care rooms. And if one of those hospital equipment go down, you probably can't do a treatment that could be the difference of life and death. So if you think about the critical infrastructure of this company, it's not just nuclear and power plants and electricity and chemical plants, it's also hospitals. And when we think about those two segments, I'm hopeful that the work that we do between the private and public take care of our population, especially the schools and hospitals. On the positive side, I'm actually on the board of Philips, a big med tech company. I actually think AI is going to really help us solve certain things in medicine, both in med tech and biotech, that extend our lives. A lot of what we've been talking about is defense.
Right.
But I think AI is going to change. If you think about imaging technologies, if you take a CT scan and an MRI, you can detect cancers earlier. There's probably going to be drugs that can come out that save lives if we can solve Alzheimer's and, you know, a lot of these diseases, ALS, that I think are at the core of a genome sequenced type of opportunities for drugs. And I hope that's in our lifetime. I mean, self-driving cars are good. I'm excited about that. That's good. But I'm a lot more excited about extending our life. My hope is that AI has a very positive effect on extending our life.
All right, Sean, in the foreword to President Trump's strategy, he writes that America will remain unrivaled in cyberspace. Now, that's a pretty powerful statement, and it's going to take robust public-private partnerships, as we've discussed today. If there's one thing to the leaders in the room who represent both, and those listening, what is your one piece of advice or one thing you'd like them to do?
I think the first thing I would say is I think that's unquestionably the case. The United States has, both on the technology and the innovation side, but on the cyber operator side, the world-class talent and personnel. And I think that's been displayed just in this year alone in multiple operations that the government's been engaged in Venezuela, in Iran, and elsewhere. Chairman Kane has been very straightforward about the use of cyber in that regard and the growing reliance that the government has on its ability. But I think for your question and people in the room, communication on this side of it is vital. whether that's from industry to government in information sharing that is actionable and helpful. It needs to flow in both directions for this endeavor to succeed. I think right now, I understand on the industry side that there's liability concerns, there's reputational concerns. I understand that in the past, the posture of the government has been to say, here's a checklist of the things that you haven't done. But that setting is changing. There is an expectation on the private sector and industry to do their part, but we want to engage so that we can collaboratively figure out how to most effectively defend the American public. Because to Sanjay's point, we're talking about some of the most vulnerable pieces of civilian infrastructure and livelihood in the free world. So it's a collective effort. We would love everyone's engagement.
Okay, great. Thank you, Sean Caron-Cross, the Director of Cyber. And Sanjay Singh. When people come to our events, we ask them to list their favorite AI. And then we also ask them their favorite prompt. So, Sean, if you don't mind, I'm going to read yours, which is, how much greater can AI make America? How about that? Good question. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you all for being here. We appreciate it. And please follow us at Washington AI Network. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you for listening to the Washington AI Network podcast. Be sure to subscribe and join the conversation. The Washington AI Network is a bipartisan forum bringing together the top leaders and industry experts to discuss the biggest opportunities and the greatest challenges around AI. The Washington AI Network podcast is produced and recorded by Haddad Media. Thanks for listening.